The following programming is sponsored by the Museum of Sports. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Our first member of the Hall of Fame class of 2025 played 15 seasons from 1963 to 77 for five teams, compiling 351 homers, 1,119 RBI, and a .292 career batting average. Today, Dick Allen becomes a member of the National Baseball Hall of Fame.
Every one of us is a walking museum of sports, from that first ball game with your parents to maybe getting that nervous, sweaty autograph to maybe even taking your own kids to the very first game. It's the feeling we all get that brings us back to our own personal Philly Field of Dreams. And the Museum of Sports show is on the air and ready to go there with you. I'm Doug Scheimel, our show dedicated to sports memories, memorabilia, and the museum that's going to capture it all as we finalize a home in the South Philly Sports Complex. We're live on the Talk 860 and Museum of Sports Facebook pages, so take a look. Museum of Sports show brought to you every week by the DePachi Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. Joining me from his sports cave in Villanova, he is truly our guide and mentor, Comcast Spectacor legend, founding vice president of the legendary Philadelphia Flyers and creator of the Museum of Sports and author of the book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created Philadelphia's Greatest Showplace. Ladies and gentlemen, Philadelphia's greatest showman, Mr. Lou Scheinfeld. Hiya, Lou.
Well, I have nothing to complain about. I have no rant. I'm in the holiday spirit. Yeah. Happy Kwanzaa. If all our teams are playing well, the Flyers, the Sixers, the Eagles, the Phillies are making some moves now. They're going after this Japanese player, a guy 23 years old. He throws in the hundreds. Not the 90s anymore. They're in the hundreds now. Doug, that we had a wonderful time at the DePachi Sports Museum in Sewell, New Jersey. Tuesday, the Museum of Sports opened its vault and treated 21 people to a festive lunch and a tour of Dr. DePachi's unbelievable magical garden of sports. Yeah. And Doug is posting a picture right now showing of all the people. On the right side is Joe Cadillac and his wife, Joe, the longtime PR director for the Flyers. Yep. Jay Simon, former promotions director for the Spectrum. And in the front row is Doug Scheimel himself waving. With to his right is Nick DePachi Jr., and to his left is Mark Mandel, City Brett. Hall aficionado. And in the baseball hat right behind him is Jerry Ehrlich, our man who gets everything done. My wife Vicky on the left waving. And behind her is Joe Fahey, just joined our group. And next to him is Lou Nolan, 53 years as a public address announcer for the Flyers, Susan Thames, me in the center. I don't know what I'm doing with my mouth there. It's weird. and to my left is, what's her name? Mindy Tamaccio, one of our top sales donation people. Next to her is one of our new members, Kim McGee. And behind her is Eric Katz, one of Dr. Tapachi's guys. And Elliot Curtin, our graphics guy, and behind him is the do-it-all guy for the museum, Steve Timon. Next to him is a young guy that's starting to work with us, Alan Swartz. And so we have we had a great time. We had an incredible tour. And I got to tell you, if you want to go see sports memorabilia that will blow you away. But I'm not exaggerating, am I, Doug?
No, it is truly, you aptly put it, I think, months and months and months ago when you said it looks like Dr. DePachi exploded in there. It is a sensory overload, for lack of a better phrase. It is probably one of the most complete, eclectic, eccentric sports memorabilia collections. It's certainly the world's largest and most valuable And it is something to behold. And obviously, as you can tell by kind of the group shot there, it is very tight confines because there is so much material in Dr. DePacci's collection. And you're seeing a fraction of it just in the frame of that picture. You're really seeing a fraction of it in the confines of that sort of, as we call it, the sneak preview collection, the sneak preview museum. And it is something to behold. And as you walk through there, you're just amazed at some of the items are kind of real curiosities and one of a kind. All are game worn, all are authenticated, all have been autographed or in some way validated. But you'll find some other unusual and frankly oddball stuff in there as well. And but it's something to behold. Everything from, as you've said, Frank Sinatra's bar from Atlantic City, it sort of boggles the mind. But it was a wonderful day. And one person you mentioned in the background, if you can see him there toward the back, is Bruce Shaw. We've had him on the show before. He is another great volunteer there, very knowledgeable. Conducted one of the tours. We took two groups through the. Through there. And of course, Michael Gold is pictured somewhere in there. And Michael may have been taking the photo.
He did take that picture.
Yeah. Curator out there at the museum. It truly is a sight to behold. They're only booking small tours there because you can tell it's kind of tight quarters there. So you would probably want to get in touch. You can go to depacimuseum.org. And get in touch with Michael and some of their fine staff there. And it is a sight to behold. And as I say, that will be it. Once we are firmly ensconced in the South Philadelphia sports complex, you will be able to see many more facets of that collection because you will have that much more square footage to sort of display it. And it will be a museum that will not be a one and done, been there, done that sort of experience. Because there is so much to the DePacci collection that it can't be done in one day. It can't be displayed in one place. They are still, and Lou, this is the magical thing. Every time we talk to Nick Jr., they are still unboxing and cataloging and curating material for the museum. And I think this may be, oftentimes it's the first time they have seen some of these things to get them into their database. It's truly a sensory overload.
Well, and not only that, what a lot of people don't realize is that every item he has is one of a kind, game worn,
yep,
and signed by the participant. He has a Jackie Robinson bat from his rookie year. It's not from his seventh year. It's his rookie bat. He's got his jersey, Jackie Robinson's jersey from his rookie year. He has Jalen Hurts' jersey from the first game he played with the Eagles. Not just a Jalen Hurts jersey. It's the first. Same with Harden. Same with Maxey. He has the first one they wore in the game and signed. And he doesn't sell anything, all right, Doug? He's a hoarder. He buys it.
A hoarder is a mild term, I think, and he would agree.
Well, Eddie Golden's having problems signing on. I just sent him our direct phone line to call in.
Yeah, Ed Golden, a wonderful fellow that goes way back with you. As I wanted to say a little earlier, coming up today, he's a local boy who has done very well in television sportscasting. You know him from years at 6ABC Action News. Jeff Skaversky is going to be joining us in the second segment. And, of course, our king of sports collectibles is going to be here to talk about what's hot and what's affordable in the sports memorabilia market and how you can get a sneak peek. You saw just a little taste of it in that picture. Of what will be in the Museum of Sports, featured, of course, with our proud partners with the DePacci memorabilia collection. Nick DePacci Jr., our own king of sports collectibles, is going to be on with us. One of the things we're going to be talking with Ed Golden about is, and this is sort of the irony, Lou, nearly a half century after this Major League ball player played his last professional game, the Phillies' Dick Allen, as many of you had heard, was finally voted into the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown after more than 20 different votes over many, many, many years. Sadly, Dick Allen did not live long enough to receive that honor. He passed 4 years ago this month, but his son and his family did get to watch the announcement. You heard part of that clip off the top of the show when the announcement was made on the Major League Baseball television network. And Lou, talk a little bit about Ed Golden. Ed is someone that sort of crossed paths with Dick Allen, not necessarily on the baseball diamond, but on the horse track.
Right. A lot of people don't realize that Dick Allen had a penchant for ponies, you might say. He owned horses. He was he loved animals. I think he loved animals more than he liked some of his teammates at one time, especially Frank Thomas, who hit him with a baseball bat. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to say one thing before we get into that part. I saw him play. Oh, I couldn't tell you how many games at Shy Park, Connie Mack Stadium. And I saw him hit home runs over the Philco sign, over the Coca-Cola sign. That was on top of the second deck, on the top of the roof, on top of a huge billboard. The ball would disappear into the night. I mean, it was just unbelievable how he hit. He had such power, and unfortunately, he didn't take good care of himself. He liked to live it up. He liked to, he kept a bottle in his locker, which was common knowledge back then. Gene Mock, the owner, and he was so strong. He was so strong. Gene Mock, the manager, said the only person who can hurt Richie Allen is Richie Allen. And that was so right. And Eddie Golden was at the game where Allen wanted to get traded, and he, with his cleats, he scratched out, "Trade me," in front of the on the dirt in front of first base. Mm-hmm. But Eddie Golden was an all-around excellent sports writer for the Daily News. Yep. I met him, and he was in my journalism class at Temple. That's how we met. He's my oldest friend. And when he got older, he moved to Los Angeles and went to work for Santa Anita Racetrack. He was a horse handicapper at Golden, we're talking about. And that's where he got friendly with Dick Allen, and he got to know him, and he talked to him, and he had some good insights, and we're hoping to get him on in a few minutes here to talk about it.
Yeah, it's you know, and I think the one of the last times we had Ed Golden on was to talk about his skin of his teeth escape from the Garden State Racetrack fire.
He climbed out a window.
Yeah.
He was up in the press box, which was where Dick Allen would hit a home run over. It was so high, way, way up at the top of Garden State over the finish line, the press box. And there was a fire. And I think he got down a couple of flights and had to climb out a window to get to the outside and got away.
Oh, boy. Well, I'll tell you. And of course, Ed Golden, you knew him because you brought him into Flyers and Spectrum for, as what, director of publicity?
Well, he was director of publicity for the Flyers and the Spectrum, probably the first one we had. And he came up with the brilliant idea to establish the Flyers Wives Carnival. Ed Snyder was looking for an idea to do something on a charity basis. And Ed came up with the idea, and he told me that Ed Snyder didn't like it at first. Of course, he didn't like Kate Smith singing the national, God Bless America either. But they've collected over $30 million for leukemia research in the years since he came up with it. And Ed Snyder, before he passed away, never failed to mention that Ed Golden came up with the idea. And Ed's very proud of that.
Well, and It's sort of an amazing career, and it's funny, you would think all of Ed Golden's years as a sports writer in Philly, that he wouldn't have crossed paths with Dick Allen. He crosses paths with him out in the West Coast on a racetrack. What was it about Dick Allen? I know we had become friends with some of the folks on Facebook. Dick Allen belongs in the Hall of Fame, Mark Carfagno and some of those other supporters. What were the things that were keeping him out of the Hall of Fame?
Well, he was a controversial guy. He very independent, very intelligent. He wasn't your average ball player to be told what to do. He was a superstar and did not have a big ego, but he wanted respect. Not over demanding and that, but and the press didn't like him because he was, I'll use the term uppity, is what they used to use back then. He didn't toe the line, you know. He was outspoken. And he kind of like I can't compare him to Embiid because Embiid's hurt a lot, but you never knew if he was going to show up or play. And when he did, and you know, he was only the most valuable player in two leagues for the Phillies and for the White Sox. Yeah. The guy hit over 300 every year. I forget how many home runs you said in the opening, Doug, he had, but he could have, if he stayed in shape, he could have been in the Hall of Fame, no matter what the press, no matter what the public thought of him years and years ago. But because he was outspoken, you know, he had to pay for it.
Hey, I'm just told that Ed Golden has finally joined us. We can spend a few minutes with him. Ed, are you there?
I am here. Finally.
Hey, Eddie,
hey,
welcome.
Ed, we were getting worried sick. You didn't call. You didn't write.
No, I was in contact, but my computer, I couldn't open the link, and I tried to key it in, and it wasn't accepting it. So, you know, it was just a frustrating experience. I got through before, and I was just no worried thing.
Just so everybody knows and who can't see Eddie Golden right now, he is, was, and still is a very handsome guy. used to have a cool mustache. Very creative guy, very sharp dresser, very neat. Everything was organized. He had a briefcase, kept everything in there. And I met Ed Golden in journalism school on the third floor of a row house on 13th Street at Temple. And somehow, and he got up to talk about why the National Football League should stop having extra points because everybody makes them. And I protested. I said, no, they need to do it. Blah. And we got to talking afterwards. And we've been best friends ever since. He's my oldest and dearest friend. And he worked with me at a couple different places, including the Trentonian and the Daily News and, of course, the Spectrum and Flyers.
And the Courier Post.
Very, very creative guy.
Yeah, the Courier Post, too. We forgot that one.
I guess I should let you talk since you're on the show. Go ahead,
well,
Eddie.
Yeah, we do go way back, and you are my oldest and dearest friend. We have a lot of memories, and not too many of us can say that these days. So, yeah, it's been a wonderful and rewarding and heartwarming experience. Thank you.
Hey, Ed, we were just talking and extolling your virtues before you came in. You, ironically, with all the time you spent as a sports writer in Philly, you ended up crossing paths with Dick Allen out on the Santa Anita racetrack in California. Tell us just briefly, you know, kind of how that relationship developed and your feelings at him finally getting the honor he deserved in Cooperstown.
Well, in 2005, I was doing the stables for Santa Anita's publicity department, and they were regarded by my peers as the best in racing, thank you. And Alan was out of Santa Anita, which was really his second, if not his first love besides baseball. And I just talked to him about the horses, and he was warm and friendly and opened up about everything, and we just spoke at length. But I had written a column about him, and I was just said, consider this. During his playing days, he batted .292. He was in there with Clemente, Rose, Aaron, McCovey, Stargell, Killebrew, Billy Williams, you know, 10 walk-off home runs behind only Babe Ruth, Jimmy Fox, Mickey Mantle, Stan Musial, and Frank Robinson. So when we talked about horses, he just opened up, and we had a very candid and comfortable conversation. He has a ranch back in Pennsylvania, and he does have two brothers, you know that, Hank and Ron. So we just had a very warm relationship after that, and it was very comforting, and it was a pleasure. He was in his realm right there at the racetrack.
Do you think he was wrongly characterized as being difficult?
Well, I think when he wrote that trade me thing on the first base side of the infield at the vet with his spikes, I don't think that did him any good. But you know, there are a lot of people in sports that have less than favorable relationships with the media, especially today. But it's a different world today. You know, with social media, it's not like it was before. You know, you could evade and cover up a lot of things back then that you can't do today. You know, everybody's wide open. You know, look what they're doing with the athletes today. They're robbing their homes when they're playing their sport. You know, it's not like it was before.
Yeah. But it's an honor richly deserved for him. You mentioned some of those other, you know, potential nominees that he was, you know, being voted down alongside.
Yes.
How much earlier do you think this could have happened? Could this have happened 10, 15, 20 years ago?
Oh, I think, yeah. Yeah, 10, 15 years ago for sure. Because my first sentence was, if Dick Allen isn't the best player not in the Hall of Fame, he's certainly one of them. And then I started to refer to some of the other records that he achieved and the other major players who were involved with those numbers. So, you know, he certainly should have been in there before this.
Well, it's one of those things that, it's all things are political. Pro sports being no different, and sort of Dick Allen bridging, you know, kind of that integration of the sport into kind of the early modern era. And, players were expected to sort of, go along with whatever they were asked to do. And Lou, as you had said, he was, you know, someone who was a high-functioning, independent thinker and who was an African-American. And those typically could be, you know, strikes against you in pro sports in those days.
Well, a lot of the media was white, almost all white back then. And they just put him in a category of he should be more humble. He shouldn't be so outspoken. He let his, between the lines, when he got on the field, he let that do his talking. And Goldie, I was telling Doug that we've been at Connie Mack Stadium or Shive Park, whatever it was back then, and saw him hit those home runs over the Philco sign, over the Coca-Cola sign. And he was so strong. I mentioned earlier that Gene Mock said, the only person who could hurt Richie Allen is Richie Allen.
Yep.
And wasn't he a strong man?
He was a very strong guy. But at the racetrack, you know, he was a pussycat. He was in his element. And he really enjoyed being out there. He had that ranch in Pennsylvania, though, and he was anxious to get back there. But if you hadn't known his background in baseball and you had just met him like I did at the racetrack, you wouldn't have known he was anything but kind and nice and generous and forthcoming. So,
did he have any luck with his horses?
Not anything of major consequence, no. He just had a couple cheap horses, and he just enjoyed being around them, watching them run, and being in the atmosphere of the racetrack, especially Santa Anita. But all the tracks in Southern California have a major ambiance. You know, Del Mar, Hollywood Park, which closed in 2013, and certainly Santa Anita. It's, you know, one of the trainers I used to interview there, who shall be nameless, I'd see him every morning. I'd say, how's it going today? And his reply was always the same, just another day in paradise. So they love it out there.
Well, Ed Golden, Dick Allen's horse racing buddy on the West Coast and legendary sports writer here in Philadelphia for so many years and in the Flyers and Spectrum front office. Thank you so much, Ed, for being on the Museum of Sports show. We're glad we finally got you in there.
Yeah, sorry for the confusion, but social media is not my thing. But I was in there earlier on a test run, and I thought I'd go through the same process.
No, we had you right strong yesterday.
I know.
Yeah, you had such promise in the combine, Ed, and we're going to bring you back as a free agent.
Yeah, that sounds good. I won't ask for too much money. All right, thanks for having me on, guys. Lou, I love you. Best of luck Ed to Golden. You and good things in the future, and hopefully we can do it again in person.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay. Happy holiday. Happy New Year, Ed.
Thank you, both of you guys.
Hey, we want to make sure our viewers and listeners go to themuseumofsports.org to make a tax-deductible contribution so you can be part of Philadelphia's Sports Shrine today as we finalize a home in the sports complex. We're going to have some cool swag that we're going to be unveiling online for folks who donate. And, of course, you can buy Lou's book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers. You can go to themuseumofsports.org, and Lou will pen a personal greeting to you. When we come back, Philly and Detroit sports and news guy Jeff Skaversky when the Museum of Sports show returns on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. We'll be right back.
It was 1967, and Philadelphia was in a rut. The economy,
riots, Vietnam. That is, until the Broad Street Bullies rallied the region's spirits and brought more than 2 million into the streets to celebrate. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's candid memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. You'll love the inside stories about Frank Sinatra, Ed Snyder, Bernie Perrant, Frank Rizzo, Elvis Presley, the 76ers, Mick Jagger, Electric Factory Concerts, and Kate Smith. And you'll find out how Lou Scheinfeld helped Ed Snyder rescue the Flyers and, against all odds, got the Spectrum built. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed first edition copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. The book the Philadelphia Inquirer called a fascinating and hilarious read. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. An ode to a building that truly rocked. The Museum of Sports Show is presented by Depatchi Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatchi is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat heart disease, hypertension, palpitations, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Dr. Nicholas Depatchi, MD-FACC, author of 4 books and over 100 articles and abstracts, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Did you miss a recent Museum of Sports show? No worries. You can see or listen to any of our previous shows on the Museum of Sports website or on our Facebook page. You'll love our lineup of great guests, including Merrill Reese, the Eagles' Vi Sekahema, Bill Berge and Kevin Riley, Flyers broadcasters Jim Jackson and Steve Coates, and the Phillies' always colorful Larry Boa. The Museum of Sports is on the air and Facebook, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860 and Facebook Live.
I think that's the Eagles' biggest challenge. But the Eagles, look, I think they're the best or the second best team in the NFC. And when it comes down to a playoff game, it may come down to just one play, just one mistake or one key moment that is going to take this team over the top.
Well, we're back on the Museum of Sports Show on Talk 860 and Facebook Live, brought to you every week by the Depatchi Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. I'm Doug Scheimel, along with Lou Scheinfeld. Our next guest, you see him there in the Zoom box. He's a Ben Salem, Pennsylvania guy who made good and for more than a decade chronicled the big sports stories on 6ABC Action News in Philly. From the Flyers' 2010 Stanley Cup run to Villanova's buzzer beater NCAA championship to the Eagles Super Bowl and the parade and everything in between. He's a Temple grad who lived to tell about it and actually interned at Action News before going to work there years later, clearly ingratiating himself in that internship. Ladies and gentlemen, a big Museum of Sports show. Welcome to Mr. Jeff Skaversky back in Philly. Good to see you, Jeff.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, this is wonderful. So you grew up in Lower Bucks there, and you got to witness the occasional thrills of victory and mostly the agonies of defeat.
I don't know about a lot of thrills of victory. I mean, I grew up in a pretty bad era of Philadelphia sports.
You're asking me what it did to Lou.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I have a lot of gray hair coming in as well. But I grew up in a really just awful era. I mean, when I think about it, you know, I think about like the stars that fans today, little kids can root for. I mean, from Bryce Harper going back to the Chase Utley and Ryan Howard and Jimmy Rollins days. I mean, after Mike Schmidt, for me as a kid, it was slim pickings. I mean, I was going through some baseball cards because you were asking about it, but I was just going through just probably thousands of baseball cards and guys you would not even know their names today. I mean, just the Phillies teams and the Eagles weren't very good during, you know, my childhood. You know, the Phillies had that one run in 93 and that was really it. I was too young to remember 83, too young to remember 80. And it was 93 and that was really it. I mean, for all eternity and my entire childhood. And then, you know, the Flyers had 97, but, you know, ultimately didn't win against the Red Wings. And so, it's been tough. It's been tough.
I am so sorry.
Yeah.
And Jeff, you know that there are 16-year-old boys or girls in Boston that have been to 10 parades.
So. Yeah. Right.
Well, that's why we hate Boston.
Well, think about here. I mean, think about the kids you know, that are at that age bracket now. Well, you had the Phillies winning the World Series, you had the Super Bowl, and they're probably saying to their parents, what are they complaining about? This is great. this is perfect. What are they, what's their problem?
And well, the Phillies have over 11,000 losses. So what does that tell you?
They're the losingest sports organization in professional sports, right?
Yeah.
And non-professional.
That's hot. Yeah. That's hot. So I figure with all that childhood trauma, you would have gone into accounting or law or medicine.
Yeah. I don't have the attention span to sit there and kind of just do any of that stuff. So I started doing TV work in high school, really, at Ben Salem High School. We had this amazing TV program that would announce the basketball and football games, the morning news. I was, really into it, even behind the scenes, doing a lot of editing and film work and things like that. And, I just kept going with it. Bounced around a bunch, and it's been a crazy unpredictable career.
So you did your internship at Channel 6. You went to Temple. You mm-hmm. were a journalism student like our legendary Lou Scheinfeld there.
Okay.
And so you do the internship there, and was it one of those things you figured, I'm going to end up in Philly? Or, knowing the nature of the business, is you don't know where you're going to end up.
I was obsessed with, I have to go back home and I want to work at home. And in my, crazy head, I said, all right, if I don't, I won't be successful unless I'm working in Philadelphia. And, I could have been, here or there nationally, and I would have always said, I have to get home. And so I was just fighting tooth and nail to try to find a way to get home. It just happened to work out there, at Channel 6 at the time. And, that was an incredible feeling to be able to get that job. And, it was an amazing run. I always wanted to work at home.
You paid your dues along the way. You started at the legendary MGM Channel 40, where a lot of Philly folks, slogged around the shore and so forth. And we've still got some folks on the air.
Yeah. And so, I had interned at Channel 6 and, I looked up to Gary Papa. And so Gary Papa, it's a crazy story. My first true job was in Macon, Georgia at a startup ABC station. And I get down there and the first week they say to me, hey, we ran out of money. We're not going to be doing the shows we hired you for.
Oh God.
And I'm like, wait, what? And I remember just, you have a few moments in life where you cry. And I remember crying because I was like just gung-ho about this business and, getting on TV and chasing my dream. And here I am in Macon, Georgia, moved down there. And then, bam, I don't really have a job here. And so within 6 weeks, the Macon, Georgia thing popped up. And, at the time when you're young and naive and you really don't know how to handle a crazy situation like that, I remember asking Gary Papa and he just said to me, Macon never happened. Don't mention it to anybody. It never, ever happened. So for years, I just, just pretended like it didn't happen. Now I talk about it and, can talk about it, but that was a rough time in an early start into my career. But so Atlantic City's truly I consider it my first job, but there was a brief 6 week stint in Macon, Georgia.
Macon, Georgia, which we don't care about now, Jeff. We just don't care about it.
We just don't.
So you were in AC. You were in Syracuse. You were in St. Louis.
St. Louis, yeah.
And then back here, right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. And then came back. And then I briefly went to Detroit to be a main news anchor after I left Channel 6.
Now, that kind of floored me because here you are. You're focused on sports. You were 13 years at Action News doing sports. How did the Detroit – because news – I mean, I could think of like Vi Sikahema. He went from sports to being the morning anchor at NBC 10. It does happen. It's like being a quarterback in college and then being converted to a wide receiver in the pros or something like that. How did that happen and how did you work it?
So sometimes in life you get dealt a tough hand and you try to make a decision and you have some tough decisions to make. And, that came up. And so we made a tough decision to go out there, and it gave me an opportunity to really take my career to the next level. You know, at Channel 6, I was working weekends and, you know, faced with a tough decision. And, you know, sometimes you're dealt with a certain hand and you just play the hand out. And,
if they're paying, Jeff.
Look, I mean, sometimes, you know, what is the expression? Life is not all sprinkles and gumdrops, right? And sometimes, you know, you get hit by a bus or face a tough situation. And so played the hand out. And, you know, the best opportunity for me to advance my career was to go to Detroit, become a main news anchor, work Monday through Friday, do the 6 and the 11 to really grow my career, as really the TV business has changed a ton, especially over the last few years. It's just changed so much. And a lot of these sports jobs, unfortunately, even in a town like this, have really just kind of vanished into thin air. I mean, if you look at all the stations, there's not a lot of stations that are doing sports the way it was done, at least when I grew up and when I was coming up and when you were at Channel 10. A lot of things have changed. And so, made a tough decision and we went to Detroit and, you know, it was tough. I mean, we were out there and, I'm always grateful for the opportunity, but it was a tough situation when we were out there away from family.
You have young kids, your young parents and you got young kids and
little kids, 8 and 2. And, when we went out there, our youngest was just 2 months old. And, so we go out there and it was just a tough situation personally and professionally. And so we just decided that it'd be best to come back and come home to Philadelphia.
Hey, Jeff, as a keen and passionate observer of sports in your hometown, last year this time the Eagles were flying high. This year, similar record, flying high. What's going to happen to this team? Are they different?
I do. I think, you grow and learn from those situations. And I kind of joked the other day, only in Philadelphia would there be issues with an 11-2 football team. I mean, think about just how silly all this is. I mean, they're 11-2. They've won 9 straight games and people are complaining. And look, are there some issues here and there with the passing right now? Yeah, of course. I mean, even the Eagles, even Jalen Hurts and Nick Sirianni and Kellen Moore, they're all admitting it, right? But they've won 9 straight. They're 11-2. And, other than the Detroit Lions, I don't think there's another team that can beat the Eagles. Are they perfect? Of course not. But were the 2017 Eagles perfect? Of course they weren't. And so who knows how all this is going to play out? Do I think it's going to play out like it did last year? I don't. This is kind of a silly, and my daughter uses this word a lot, cartoony. I think it's kind of a cartoony week.
Yeah, well, they're winning, but they're not winning right. You know what I mean?
I don't buy that. A win is a win. Let me ask you a question. Can you go back to 2017 and go through those games and remember the games they barely won or the blowouts? I don't think you can. I'm not smart enough to remember all that, but
when a starting quarterback goes down and your backup is in there, you're thinking season done.
Like what would you want? Would you want them? Then the other conversation is, they're winning every game 44-3. Then the conversation would switch to, well, they're not going to know how to win a close game when it presents itself. Right. And then they're going to get into a close game and then they can't win. It's cartoony. There are issues. And
we're going to start ripping that term off. We're ripping that off.
The AJ Brown stuff is a little, I think, blown out of proportion. Think about if you have a brother or sibling or your parents or whatever, sometimes you get into a little thing with them. It's not a big deal. There was just some frustration from that game. And everyone expresses it differently. But, AJ Brown, remember, did not come out and say, it's all Jalen Hurts' fault. He didn't say any of that. He just said the passing game. How else do you want him to describe that situation? So when they were struggling early on, a lot of the team captains went to Nick Sirianni. Jalen Hurts and Nick Sirianni had a lot of conversations during that bye week about changing things up, running the ball more, relying on Saquon Barkley. And they did that and they've won 9 straight. And so listen, the complaints to me, forget about it.
It's like Mike Schmidt said, It's the joy of winning and then the agony of reading about it the next day.
Right. Well, think about how tough Philly fans were on Mike Schmidt. I mean, Mike Schmidt's the greatest third baseman ever, but is a tough city to play in. You know, it's the greatest fan base, in my opinion, and I've traveled around the country. It's the greatest fan base, period. I don't care what anyone says. It is by far the best.
And that is why we're getting a Museum of Sports. Is that something, Jeff, that you sat back in your head being a lifelong guy here and going, why doesn't Philly have a Museum of Sports?
Yes. When you guys reached out to me about it, I said to myself, there's not really one already. Like, that doesn't sound right. And that shocked me. And then I really do hope, we were talking about the fans, I hope there's a fan wing. You know, I think, you know, not only just the teams and the players and things like that, but you know, a section for the fans and all the
snowballs and batteries and
right.
Eagles court. Hey,
jail.
before we go, Jeff, I know you pulled out. You said you were going through some of your stuff. What did you find memorabilia wise? Did you find some cards?
So, you know, we just moved back. You know, we're still have lots of boxes. So a lot of my good stuff is in boxes somewhere. I hope it didn't get lost in the movie. It's somewhere. But I found a bunch of baseball cards. Now, as a kid, I don't know if you can see this with the glare here, but as a kid, I was obsessed with collecting Phillies cards. Darren Dalton's, Mike Schmidt's, Pete Rose's. You know, I have every Mike Schmidt baseball card, I believe, other than his rookie card. I have every Mike Schmidt, I believe, baseball card that's ever been made.
Really?
I think so. And that's just going back from when I was a kid. Like, I don't collect now or buy them now, but I have everyone, I think, since the Mike Schmidt's rookie, which is like, I think he's on like, it's on with like Ron Say. It's like one of those cards with like three guys on it. And I remember like the card at these card shops when I was probably in high school was like $100. And I'm going, that is insanity for a baseball card. And then when I finally was able to afford a $100 baseball card, I went to myself, well, I don't need this anymore. Like, I've kind of lost that, you know, collecting thing from when I was a kid. But I believe I have every Mike Schmidt baseball card, tons of Pete Rose cards, Steve Carlton, things like that. Lots of Darren Dalton, John Kruk. My favorite one as a kid, I don't think I have it in here in this book, but one of my favorites, I don't think I have it. Lots of Darren Daltons and Tommy Greens and Kim Batiste and Chad McConnell.
That's pretty impressive. But have you ever had those? Have you ever had any of them appraised or ever had any sense of value in those?
No, I haven't. I really haven't. I mean, like I said, lots of Lenny Dykstra's and Von Hayes, but my favorite one as a kid, there was a card in 93. It was called Hammer and Nails, and it was Lenny Dykstra, Darren Dalton, Dave Hollins, and John Kruk. And it's the four of them at Veterans Stadium on one card. I believe I have it signed by all four of them. And that's one of my favorites ever, because, you know, that was kind of my middle school freshman year time. And that team was very, very special to me.
That was the dirt bags.
I was just going to say, that's the Rogues Gallery. That was the Rogues Gallery.
Well, I kind of joke that it is amazing that of that entire, you know, team, like John Kruk, you know, is like the most sane guy. You know, when you think about it, like John Kruk is like the, you know, the most normal guy of them all. But that was a fun group. And, you know, still to this day is, you know, you hear funny stories and stuff like that about them.
Well, I'll tell you what, I know you got to run. You got to take one of your kids somewhere. I think go back.
I'm like an Uber driver for these children.
When you go back and curate a few of the cards, we'll have you back on with our King of Sports Collectibles. We'll do some spot appraisals, and we call it the scare the crap out of the guest segment.
Okay. Yeah,
so maybe find a few of them that you think might have some potential value. Let me know, and we'll have you on with Nick Jr.
Well, I probably not a lot of my Phillies cards probably, but we talk about those.
As Nick Jr. will say, you never know. You never know. Hey, TV sportscaster Jeff Skaversky, great to have you back in the market, and great having you on the Museum of Sports show. You know, pull out some of those cards. We'll do a quick appraisal and let us know. We need to be paying attention to something. Come back anytime.
Great. Thank you guys so much for having me. It was a joy talking to you guys.
Excellent. Jeff, thank you so much, man.
See you.
Hey, when we come back, our King of Sports collectibles, when the Museum of Sports show continues right here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live, back in a couple of minutes.
Can you imagine Philadelphia without the Broad Street Bullies or its fabled Spectrum Arena? Well, it almost happened until Lou Scheinfeld and Ed Snyder, otherwise known as Flash and Cash, teamed up to rescue the Flyers and got America's Showplace up and running. It was 1967, and the world was in a whole different place. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's heartfelt memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed copy at themuseumofsports.org. themuseumofsports.org. Blades, Bands, and Ballers, now available. The Museum of Sports Show is presented by Depatchi Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatchi is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat shortness of breath, brain fog, chronic disease, autonomic dysfunction syndrome, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Nicholas Depatchi, MD, FACC, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Who remembers the Philadelphia A's or the Warriors or the old arena at 46th and Market? We do, and that's why the Museum of Sports is being planned for Philadelphia. What's it like to face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, ride your bike up the Maniunk Wall, or drive in the Pocono 500? We've got rare items from Babe Ruth, Mike Schmidt, Chuck Bednar, Bernie Perron, and Wilt Chamberlain. The Museum of Sports is on the air, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860.
Hey, buddy, what can I get you? How about the ultimate sports memorabilia basement?
Welcome back to the Museum of Sports Show here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. I'm Doug Scheimel along with Lou Scheinfeld. Museum of Sports Show brought to you by the Depatchi Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. And up next, he is our king of sports collectibles, whose family has the world's largest and most valuable sports memorabilia collection, well in excess of $50 million. And they are our proud partner in the Museum of Sports as we finalize a home in the new South Philly sports complex. Say hi to Nick Depatchi Jr. Hi, Nick.
Lou, Doug, everybody. It's good to see you.
We had a great time at the museum on Tuesday. It was sort of the Museum of Sports Depatchi holiday get-together, I guess you would say. And it was a lot of fun. I think anybody who had not seen the collection was just overwhelmed by it.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot to take in when you get when you walk in the building there. As you can see, there's not much wall space.
There is wall space. It's just covered.
It's just covered.
And you know what? I've been there 10 times. And every time I come, it's better. And there are things I didn't see before. And there's new things. It's just amazing what is there. And I think we have some good pictures that we took. And here's a picture of all of us.
And Doug and I got right on the ground.
You're on the first row.
I don't know how we managed that.
Look how we got everybody in that picture. Michael Goldis, what a man. The rest of the crew, we even got the caterer down there.
But it was a fun day, and I think it really – one of the things we were talking about off the top of the show, Nick, is and it's the same thing you've brought up several times. You know, it's a growing, breathing, living, organic, a collection. And you can see how sort of tight it is in there. And, you know, and there's a lot of stuff that's out on display. And there's a lot of stuff in the vault. And there's a lot of stuff still in storage. And so it's one of the things that when people say, we can't believe, you go to a museum and it's a one and done thing. It would never be a one and done thing.
Oh, no. Like Lou said, he always sees something new every time.
It's evergreen, I think, is the term you use.
Yes, we say evergreen effect.
Well, and it's interesting because you look at all of the uniforms. There's uniforms with dried mud, with grass stain, with what could be probably, you know, decades old blood. And it's one of those things that those are the things that help authenticate it, particularly if you're testing DNA. But those are the things that in a collector's eyes, you suddenly went, oh my God, this, you know, this is the Holy Grail. Is that the way you guys look at it?
Oh yeah. No, that's exactly what we look for. We look for any item that is unique that's one of a kind or the best known example of its kind. And the more game use it can show, the better.
Now, one of the things we had, Jeff Skaberski, longtime 6ABC sportscaster, and he had pulled out some, he'd grown up in Bend, Salem in Lower Bucks County, Pennsylvania. And so he had been through a lot of the, you know, the agony of defeat of Phillies teams. And but he kept a pretty extensive baseball card collection, mostly Phillies. And, you know, I said, have you ever had those appraised? Have you ever had them looked at? And, you know, he's got them in the three ring binder and the sleeves and so forth and so on. And there's a lot of all-star players in there, you know, collected from probably back when he was, you know, a kid, you know, an early teen. And I told him, I said, go back and curate some of those. He said, never had them appraised. But how would you know in a collection like that, that goes back to maybe your childhood, which of those might be worth something if you've never had them appraised? Is there sort of a basic test, litmus test?
Oh, I mean, there's so many resources out there where there's all these apps and websites that you could just type in the name of the player, the year of the card, the make, and it will come right up and it will tell you, it will give you a graph of how those that exact card has sold over time. So that would be the first thing to do. Obviously, you're looking for the better players and you're looking specifically for rookie cards. And then you go from there.
And everybody has one of these books. I have one. My kids have one. And I keep saying, I got to get this appraised. But then I don't want to go into a higher tax bracket. So I have to be kind of careful with that. But this kind of stuff that you save when you're a kid. And this is my son's. And he started when he was
the 5 or 6
years old. He's 31. He's 31 now. So these cards are 25 years old. And there are some rookie cards in here. So I'm going to, you know, if he forgets he loaned this to me, I'm going to get it appraised and I'll keep the money.
Well, my son was very upset because his mother had given a neighbor's young son his binder of Pokemon cards when he went off to college. I think he went off to college. And Alec, my son, is very, very tuned into the value of those cards. He said, Dad, I could have paid for 4 years of college with that. And I said, oh, dear. And those are the sort of things you just don't think about. Generationally, you don't think about it. And how much stuff is lost in that regard? Now, see, there you go. You got the Pokemon cards there. But Nick, is that one of those things that so many times people just either they toss them or they give them away or, you know, or they undersell them? They're undervalued and they're undersold.
Yes, and that was more of the case years ago. Now I think people are more careful about it, but especially years ago, that was the case. I remember my mom always says that this isn't sports memorabilia related, but she had a lot of original Beatles memorabilia, and to make room, like her and her mom, like they didn't even give it away. They actually burned it, my grandma and my mom.
Oh no.
Not because, just... I don't even know why, because my mom loves the Beatles, so why would she even burn it? But that's what they did. And like people in your generations put the cards in the spokes of the bicycle.
Yeah, that was my fate.
And they would be 70 years old now, those cards, 75 years old. But they did make a lot of noise. Sorry.
Mine didn't quite sound like that, but
now what exactly was the purpose of it though? What did they
It made a motorcycle sound,
yeah,
right?
It made a noise like a motorcycle.
Yeah. That's how we entertained ourselves in the early days of television or radio. Hey, Nick, before we go, so much stuff is continuing to come online at the museum. Any surprises in the last couple of weeks that you guys have unboxed that you went, oh, my God, I didn't know we had this?
Like you said, every day there's something. I'll have to make a list every day that something's unboxed that we didn't remember we have. I'll make a list for the show.
Yeah, because it just seems like, you know, and we've combed the museum several times. We've had you guys do it, Mike Goldis, Bruce Shaw. And each time, this being my first physical time there, I'm looking at things. I'm like, I've never heard them talk about this before. And we went back into the vault and, you know, never heard anything, you know, talked about along those lines. So I think you're discovering it as we're discovering it almost.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So I'm going to have to make a running list of all the new items, the new old items that we find.
Oh, that's excellent.
Well, the gentleman who took us around, he said, you just received a box from FedEx, and in it were four amazing baseballs signed by Babe Ruth and Musial and a few, and then a couple of jerseys, and it blew him away.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I think it's every day is a surprise. Well, you can check out, you can schedule a quick sneak preview tour at depachemuseum.org. That's all the time we've got for this week, guys. We want to thank our guests, Dick Allen's friend, Ed Golden, Philly TV sportscaster Jeff Skaberski, and of course, our king of sports collectibles, Nick DePaccia Jr. And don't forget to buy Lou's book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created Philadelphia's Greatest Showplace. You can go to themuseumofsports.org. We'll also be releasing some cool swag for folks who donate. Proceeds benefit the Museum of Sports. Museum of Sports show brought to you by the DePaccia Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. For Lou Scheinfeld, Nick DePaccia Jr., I'm Doug Scheimel, reminding of what our good friend Carly Simon always says, Louis.
These are the good old days.
They are indeed. Happy holidays. Happy New Year, everybody. Good seeing you, Nick.
Same to you.
Hey, Nicholas.
See you.